West Side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had everything. Talking about boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super's boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. My people singing, baby, where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, 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 don't stop, we won't stop.
Good afternoon, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on the west side at UBC on CITR 101.9. There's lots of news in the world of astronomy, stuff like ice cream and pizza. Yes, they have delivered ice cream and pizza to the International Space Station, ISS. I don't know how they're going to cook it or how they're going to keep it frozen. I guess they have things to keep it frozen, but how do you cook pizza on a space station? Anyway, the astronauts are getting a nice taste of something. And earlier in the week, I think Monday and Tuesday, could still be happening. But with our weather, what does it matter? I think the planets Venus and Jupiter, or Venus and Saturn, lined up. There was a planetary alignment, but we couldn't see it because we're on the west side. We're at Vancouver, and it rains now all the time. So some planetary alignments and some ice cream and some pizza are in the news for space talk or astro talk. So last week I talked about penguins. So there was a competition to develop models to count penguin populations in the Antarctica. There's a digital, or there's an app by NASA that's trying to get it done, but they need people to make the models. So there's a competition. So they're trying to get a good accurate number and future forecasts of penguin growth, penguin populations, and they're doing it with NASA satellites, so it's easier to do it than on the ground, so they can count the penguins. Okay, so what else are we going to do? We're going to listen to gravitational waves. Okay, as everybody knows, gravitational waves have been in the news lately a bit. If you're an astronomer, you've been listening, and you're happy because gravitational waves are in vogue these days. My microphone is fighting me, so if you give me a sec, it keeps smacking me in the jaw as soon as I let it go. Okay, that's not very good. Okay, so anyway, here I'm gonna listen to gravitational waves using pulsars. So what's a pulsar? It's a neutron star that spins very quickly, so it gives a regular pulse. It's a radio wave, I believe it's a radio wave, and because it spins so fast, many times a second, it goes beep, 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 or blip, 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 and that's a pulsar. So we're going to listen for gravitational waves using pulsars. It's an article in www.nasa.gov, dated November 13th, 2017. Now here's a computer simulation showing the collision of two black holes, which produces gravitational waves. So how do we use pulsars to listen to gravitational waves? So as we heard a few weeks ago, or was it a month ago, two neutron stars collided and they give off some gravitational waves. But what is different from two neutron stars colliding and two black holes colliding is when two black holes collide, they merge and they make a bigger black hole, and some of the mass of the black hole is consumed. It's given off as radiation, and but a lot of the visible radiation as a gravitational wave, but the visible radiation cannot escape the gravitation of the black hole. But when two neutron stars collide, and I think it produces a kilonova, so produce another flash, it gives off gravitational waves, but it also gives off waves that, like light waves, X-rays, all kinds of other waves in the electromagnetic spectrum. So now we're going to just listen for gravitational waves. I think we're not going to do where they give off other radiation. They only give off gravitational waves. And we're going to use a pulsar to do that. So again, as a pulsar is a neutron star that spins several times a second. I think the fastest pulsar is about 740 spins a second. It's pretty fast. And I believe pulsars eventually slow down. But so I'm going to read the article. Listening for Gravitational Waves Using Pulsar, November 13th, 2017, on www.nasa.gov. Here goes the article. One of the most spectacular achievements in physics so far this century has been the observation of gravitational wave ripples in space-time that result from masses accelerating in space. So far, there have been five detections of gravitational waves thanks to the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, or LIGO, and more recently, the European Virgo Gravitational Wave Detector. Using these facilities, scientists have been able to pin down the extremely subtle signals from relatively small black holes and, as of October, neutron stars. But there are emerging objects far larger whose gravitational wave signals have not yet been detected. Supermassive black holes, more than 100 million times more massive than our Sun. Most large galaxies have a central supermassive black hole, like ours. I think ours is called Sagittarius A star, and it is, I think, something like 4.3 to 4.6 million times the mass of our Sun. So these are called supermassive black holes. When galaxies collide, their central black holes tend to spiral towards each other, releasing gravitational waves in their cosmic dance. Much as a large animal like a lion produces a deeper roar than a tiny mouse's squeak, merging supermassive black holes create lower frequency gravitational waves than the relatively small black holes LIGO and similar ground-based experiments can detect. So says Joseph Lazio, a chief scientist for NASA's Deep Space Network based at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and quote, observing low-frequency gravitational waves would be akin to be able to hear bass signals, not just sopranos, end quote. To explore this uncharted area of gravitational wave science, researchers look not to human-made machines, but to a natural experiment in the sky called a pulsar timing array. Pulsars are dense remnants of dead star that regularly emit beams of radio waves, which is why some call them cosmic lighthouses. Because their rapid pulse of radio emission is so predictable, a large array of well-understood pulsars can be used to measure extremely subtle abnormalities, such as gravitational waves. The North American Nanohertz Observatory for Gravitational Waves, or NanoGrav, a physics frontier center of the National Science Foundation, is one of the leading groups of researchers using pulsars to search for gravitational waves. Now that's interesting. How do you use a pulsar to search for a gravitational wave? Well, I'll read on and I'll find out. You know what? It might be a good time to take a break now. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to talk more about gravitational waves. So please hang on. This is Marco. You're listening to Astrock on CITR 101.9.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, University of British Columbia.
You're back with Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you. That was Fat Joe and Sahar. Thank you, Sahar. So we're talking about gravitational waves. So Einstein predicted them about a century ago. Look how far ahead he was of his time. We're just trying. The science is now booming. So good for you, Einstein. You did well. So I don't have to tell him that. Everybody knows that. Okay. So I'm going to read more about listening for gravitational waves using Pulsar. The new Nature Astronomy study, which is done by Joseph Lazo, a chief scientist for NASA's Deep Space Network, based at JPL in California, concerns supermassive black hole binaries, systems of two of these cosmic monsters. For the first time, researchers surveyed the local universe for galaxies likely to host these binaries, then predicted which black hole pairs are the likeliest to merge and to be detected while doing so. The study also estimates how long it will take to detect one of these mergers. So says Chiara Mingirelli, a lead study author who also worked at JPL and is a researcher at the Marie Curie Postdoctoral Fellow. And quote, by expanding our pulsar timing array over the next 10 years or so, there is a high likelihood of detecting gravitational waves from at least one supermassive black hole binary. But they're still not telling us how they're doing it, what method. Okay, they're using pulsars, but how do they use pulsars to detect these waves? Okay, so I'll read on and maybe they'll tell us. Mingirelli and colleagues used data from two micron all-sky surveys, or TUMASS, that's 2MASS, the 2-micron all-sky survey, which surveyed the sky from 1997 to 2001, and galaxy merger rates from the Illustrious Simulation Project, and endeavored to make large-scale cosmological simulation. In their sample of about 5,000 galaxies, scientists found that about 90 would have had supermassive black holes, most likely to merge with another black hole. While LIGO and similar experiments detect objects in the final seconds before they merge, pulsar timing arrays are sensitive to gravitational wave signals from supermassive black holes that are spiraling towards each other and will not combine for millions of years. That's because galaxies merge hundreds of millions of years before the central black holes they host combine to make one giant supermassive black hole. Okay, so the galaxies start to merge, and it takes hundreds of millions of years for the two black holes in these galaxies to merge. Researchers also found that while bigger galaxies have bigger black holes and produce stronger gravitational waves when they combine, these mergers also happen fast, shortening the time period for detection. For example, black holes merging in the large galaxy M87 would have a 4-million-year window of detection. By contrast, in the smaller Sombrero galaxy, black hole mergers typically take about 160 million years, offering more opportunities for pulsar timing arrays to detect gravitational waves from them. But they're still not telling me how pulsars are being used to detect these gravitational waves. So it says here, pulsar timing arrays are sensitive to gravitational wave signals. Okay, they're sensitive to the signals, but then how do they measure this signal, their sensitivity? Black hole mergers generate gravitational waves because as they orbit each other, their gravity distorts the fabric of space-time, sending ripples outward in all directions at the speed of light. These distortions actually shift the position of Earth and the pulsars ever so slightly, resulting in a characteristic and detectable signal from the array of celestial lighthouses. Okay, so that's how they do it. The distortions shift the position of the pulsar, and if they measure the shift, they can measure that's akin to measuring the gravitational wave. Interesting. Okay, now says Mangiarelli again, and quote, a difference between when the pulsar signal should arrive and when they do arrive can signal a gravitational wave. I think, wow, that's probably a very faint signal. Have to be very sensitive equipment to do that. And how do you detect a shift from a pulsar from so many hundreds of millions of light years away? Interesting stuff. And since the pulsars we study are about they're not hundreds of millions, they're 3,000 light years away. Okay, and since the pulsars we study are about 3,000 light years away, they act as a galactic scale gravitational wave detector, end quote. Interesting. Okay. Because all supermassive black holes are so distant, gravitational waves, which travel at the speed of light, take a long time to arrive at Earth. The study looked at supermassive black holes within about 700 million light years, meaning waves from a merger between any two of them would take up to that long to be detected by the scientists. So that's interesting. A lot of these things that happen, they've happened thousands or millions of years ago, and it took that long for the gravitational wave to reach us. So again, one of the examples I use is Betelgeuse, the star in Orion. It could go nova or supernova anytime. It's 500 light years away. And you know what? It could have gone nova yesterday or right now, and it will take 500 years for us to know it. So 530 years, however far it is. Okay, back to the article. I'm going to read that last paragraph again because I didn't finish it and I wandered off. Okay, because all supermassive black holes are so distant, gravitational waves, which travel at the speed of light, take a long time to arrive at Earth. This study looked at supermassive black holes within about 700 million light years, meaning waves from a merger between any two of them would take up to that long to be detected here by scientists. By comparison, about 650 million years ago, algae flourished and spread rapidly in the Earth's ocean, an event important to the evolution of more complex life. Many open questions remain about how galaxies merge and what will happen when the Milky Way approaches Andromeda, the nearby galaxy that will collide with ours in about 4 billion years. I thought it was about 2 billion years, and I thought it was shorter now because they found, looking at it, at light that was not visible light, it's closer. It's bigger than we thought, so the Andromeda galaxy is closer to us. That could mean the Milky Way is bigger than we thought, so it could be, who knows when they merge. But when they do merge, we'll have a front row seat, right? No, it'll be 4 billion years from now. So says Leonidas Moustakas, a JPL research scientist, who wrote an accompanying News and Views article in the journal, end quote, detecting gravitational waves from billion solar mass black hole mergers will help unlock some of the most persistent puzzles in galaxy formation, end quote. Two Mass was funded by NASA's Office of Space Science, the National Science Foundation, the U.S. Naval Observatory, and the University of Massachusetts. JPL managed the program for NASA's Office of Space Science, Washington. Data was processed at IPAC at Caltech in Pasadena, California. Okay, so that was interesting. This article talks about listening for gravitational waves using pulsers. So they can get a pulser and note how when a gravitational wave is sent out, it warps space-time. So it will change slightly the position of the pulsar, and that's how scientists can detect how a gravitational event, a gravitational wave has occurred. Okay, so there's lots to talk about in astronomy, but my time is nearly up. Okay, here's an article, November 2nd, 2017. I'll read it. I only have a couple minutes. Oh, actually, I have more than that. I have 6 minutes. So, New Star Probes Black Hole Jet Mystery. This is October 30th, 2017 on www.nasa.gov. An artist's concept shows a black hole with an accretion disk, a flat structure of material orbiting the black hole, and a jet of hot gas called plasma. Okay, so black holes are famous for being ravenous eaters, but they do not eat everything that falls toward them. A small portion of material gets shot back out in powerful jets of hot gas called plasma that can wreak havoc on their surroundings. Along the way, this plasma somehow gets energized enough to strongly radiate light, forming two bright columns along the black hole's axis of rotation. Scientists have long debated where and how this happens in the jet. Astronomers have new clues to this mystery. Using NASA's New Star Telescope, that's NUSTAR. I can't see what the acronym is, but I'll read it later if I come across it. New Star Space Telescope and a fast camera called Ultracam on the William Herschel Observatory in La Palma, Spain. Scientists have been able to measure the distance that particles and jets travel before they turn on and become bright sources of light. The distance is called the acceleration zone. The study is published in the journal Nature Astronomy. Scientists looked at two systems in the Milky Way, called X-ray binaries, each consisting of a black hole feeding off a normal star. They studied these systems at different points during periods of outburst, which is when the accretion disk, a flat structure of material orbiting the black hole, brightens because of material falling in. One system, called V404 Cygni, had reached nearly peak brightness when scientists observed it in June 2015. At that time, it experienced the brightest outburst from an X-ray binary seen in the 21st century. The other, called Big G Big X 339-4, was less than 1% of its maximal expected brightness when it was observed. The star and black hole of GX 339-4 are much closer together than in the V404 Cygni system. Despite the differences, the system showed similar time delays, about 1/10 of a second between new star first detected X-ray light and ultragram detected flares and visible light slightly later. That delay is less than a blink of an eye, but significant for the physics of black hole jets. So why is it significant? I guess we'll read on. So says Pashak Gandhi, lead author of the study and astronomer at the University of Southampton in the United Kingdom, and quote, "One possibility is that the physics of the jet is not determined by the size of the disk, but instead by the speed, temperature, and other properties of particles at the jet's base," end quote. The best theory scientists have to explain the result is the X-ray light originates from material very close to the black hole. Strong magnetic fields propel some of this material to high speeds along the jet. How do they do that? That's interesting. Okay. This results in particles colliding near light speed, energizing the plasma until it begins to emit the stream of optical radiation caught by ultragram. When in the jet does this occur? The measured delay between optical and X-ray light explains this. By multiplying this amount of time by the speed of the particles, which is nearly the speed of light, scientists determine the maximum distance traveled. The expanse of about 19,000 miles, or 30,000 kilometers, represents the inner acceleration zone in the jet, where plasma feels the strongest acceleration, and my other show's coming, so thank you for listening. This has been Marco. We've been talking about all kinds of gravitational waves and jets and black holes and stuff like that. So tune in next week. I'm going to try to get Trina Ray on soon. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.1. 101.9.